Okay,
oh, and
we are live. Watch out. This is another episode of PBJ. Welcome, guys.
Are we live? I think we're live now.
And now, this is PBJ, and I'm your host, David King.
It's new hairstyle, David.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I've been trying some new things out, you know, playing on the jazz piano. My hair grew out, and, you know.
For our live listeners, thanks for your patience. Yes. We had some technical difficulties, but Ashu, our producer, came through in a big way.
Shout out to Ashu.
We're gonna have to police the studio though, because someone was here beforehand and basically modified every single possible knob and option.
It sounds like Steve's ready to lay down the law.
I'm ready to lay down the law.
I wouldn't want to be whoever messed up our studio.
I feel for Ashu, but he delivered. I think at least we can hear each other well now. Hopefully, the audience can see us and hear us.
At Satbot, want to send Ashu 1,000 Bitcoin?
And we are back after a week off because we had busy lives happening. I think Max, I don't want to fully dox you, but I think you were off having some fun.
Well, Max and I had stuff going on.
Stuff going on. And I'm okay with a little dox. I won't give all the details away, but one of the many topics I want to discuss on the show is, you know, while you gentlemen were here in the rain, or I don't know, DK appears to be in an undisclosed location, but Steve was in the rain. Maybe DK was in the rain. I was gone for a week, and it was Anjali's birthday, her first time ever, my first time in over a decade, second time in like 25 years, which is crazy to say. It makes me feel like an old man back at the Mardi Gras. And I got to say, being back in New Orleans and coming back here, San Francisco, I have a lot of thoughts to share. But my number one thought is like, oh man, I forgot how different the rest of the world is. San Francisco is awesome. Very grateful to be back. But man, is it a bubble. Our technology world, like it was just like a shocking reminder of like, oh yeah, like when you say Claude down there, everybody's thinking about St. Claude Street. like no one there gives, like they could not care less about what's happening with AI. Just the question is just where's the party at? And it was very, very eye-opening to remember people live radically different lives.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar when I'm in Iowa. Yeah. And I'm sure if you go back to Memphis.
Yeah. But the one thing I will say is, I think we talked about this on the show, you know, in a way to me, though, is extremely encouraging. Like, I made this joke with you guys, and it's kind of a joke, but kind of not, where it's like, all right, the bad news is we're all with AGI coming and being the permanent underclass. The good news is it's going to be awesome. Like, you
know, the permanent underclass is a great place to be.
I mean, it's kind of a joke, but I think I saw some guy writing about this a couple weeks ago, maybe closer to Christmas, when he was saying, like, you know, maybe the future, like, post-career, like traditional, we think of careers and jobs is, you know, more like Latin America. And I would say New Orleans feels a lot more like Brazil or somewhere in Latin America, where, you know, a lot of people, they may not have had traditional careers in the first place, but like they're having pretty great lives. You have side hustles and like you're out there like with other humans and like you're watching music. And like, it was so interesting also to see like how anti-technology, I forgot how anti-technology was. Like every like jazz club, it's like absolutely no phones. You cannot take them out. You know, I saw stickers with like Dune related topics, which is all about taking down the AI. And like, you know, on the one hand, are you going to get left behind? Maybe. But like, if you're just going with your friends and playing music and like having a good time, like, what'd you miss? I don't know. It was a very eye-opening experience.
That resonates with me, except like economics, right? I mean, earning an income to pay for food and rent, et cetera, right? I'm definitely not a doomer. Yeah. I think this will just be like another technology cycle, like historical, except just accelerated and higher amplitude. But I think it'll create tons of new opportunities that we can't even like imagine or see. Mm-hmm. So I don't think humans are going to be rendered pointless, but it's going to be super disruptive. Okay. And you know, so those who see it early are understanding how to leverage these tools are going to be the best off. Then there'll be folks who learn sort of in real time, oh, I just lost my job or my kid can't get a job. But they'll adapt. And then others just won't ever adapt. And I mean, they're going to be, that group of people will be hitting hard times, right?
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, the one thing that I would say that could happen different is if AI makes the basics, like imagine we get too close to free energy and it's like, right. You know, the basics of like basic food, basic shelters covered, as my dad sometimes jokes, after that, it's all toys. And, you know, I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's like, yeah, you can in some sense get left behind. But if, you know, food is so cheap and if housing is so cheap, I also think it's interesting, like something I've gone back and forth on, I'm curious your takes on this, is like post AGI, like obviously San Francisco Bay Area is like rising to new heights, which again, you know, there's a reason I, you know, chose to live here. I feel very lucky to live here. On the other hand, though, I could easily see a place like New Orleans. I could see it going either way, like doing very poorly or very, very, very well. Because it's like, what I saw is, I mean, it's like, it's almost like a, I mean, it was a bit too extreme. And I think Anjali, for example, for someone coming from, let's put this way, the Bay Area mind cannot comprehend everything that we saw. Some things you can't unsee. Some things even I was just like, damn, like, is that for real? Like, this was Carnival though. You know, it was like a Disney World for adults. Like people are coming there for the reason of they don't want the technology. It's like, they want to see the guy playing the trumpet and they will pay. Yeah. And it's like, if you want to see the best human, like sure, the AI can make great trumpet music, but I want to see that dude play his trumpet and I will pay up to go and be in the show and not have my phone. And like, I want this meal prepared by this guy. Like I could easily see a world where they do pretty well. Post AGI.
I think also there's a lot changing underground too, because like how is land use going to work in the future? It's probably not going to be the same as it is. So like, how is transportation going to work? How is land use going to work? It could be that you can build whole new regions that are inaccessible to New Orleans or the Bay Area or wherever. You could build new cities that actually become accessible and you can use land in more efficient ways. And obviously with like robots coming to do a bunch of construction, like there's just, it's just such a radically different world. I think it's hard to reason about because we often assume that some things are going to be fixed and that everything else is going to change in a few directions. And it's like everything is changing right now. It's just so, it's like dramatic in every direction. So
yeah. And it's hard to
get the timelines.
Well, we've talked about, you know, with, you know, energy, particularly solar getting so cheap so quickly, all of a sudden you can do things like afford to terraform the desert. So I think you'll absolutely see new cities in the desert. Maybe we'll see cities on the moon, maybe on Mars. Like I think everything is on the table, but I still think even in that world, a place like New Orleans, because it's, and even San Francisco to a degree, it's so old. There's so much history. The one thing you can't build is like a past, right? And so people, for whatever reason, it's like, it's charming. It's amazing. It's like, you know, you go there and there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of history. And like, that's why you go.
So. Yeah.
So switching topics, if I may.
From the carnival.
I'm going to give drop a little alpha.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Alpha. All right. I saw you on your phone. Did you just read this right now? Important.
No. Ashu actually gave me a demo beforehand that you guys missed out on. Because not only is Ashu like a kick-ass producer, he also has been working on a project that I'm excited about for PBJ or any of the media productions from PB. I wanted to see, you know, we've done, 60 episodes, like 90 hours plus of content. We've covered a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes someone will bring up, hey, Steve, what are your thoughts on this or whatever? And I want to point them to our show.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, I don't want to just say, oh, go listen to our, I mean, some of my friends will say, this is exactly what I say, but it's kind of a jerky move to just say, oh, go watch the show, right? I mean, there's 90 hours of content. It would be nice to just like, be like, go to this website, go to the, and have like a topic index, like which topic are you interested in? Click on that and then instantly see, oh, these are the three episodes and here's the timestamp for each. Right. You just click and it goes right to the segment where we talk about it. That would be slick. And Ashu is building this and demoed it to me right before the show.
Woo!
Good job, Ashu.
That's awesome.
Wow. He also told me it was his first time using Claude Code and really vibe coding. And first of all, great job. And but he's kind of had his mind blown at what he's able to do.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
love to hear it.
That seems like a very useful general purpose tool. Is that something that he might open up?
I guess we'll find out. He definitely has designed it so far. What he showed me that it's generalized. It's not just PBJ specific. It can work for all the PB content. And so it wouldn't surprise me if it's not too hard to make it as like an open source tool for any podcast.
One question on that. What does something I've been thinking a little bit, like what does open source even look like in the future? because let's say Oshie's got this awesome tool and he wants to open source. I mean, like, okay, he can obviously, whatever, push the repo or like let anyone use the app for free or charge or whatever. But like in the future, the code itself is not necessarily that valuable. It's the agent knowing how to use that tool. So like, let's say we wanted to push this tool out there for the world. Does it look more like a skill or something that your Claude bot or, you know, whatever SAP bot knows how to do for you? Is it still an app? Is it actually code that you push to GitHub? Like, what would it look like for us to, quote, open source that for Oshie to?
Yeah, I do think we'd want GEO, mm-hmm. And which I guess is a, at least for OpenClaw, skills.md, but, you know, yeah. Markdown files.
What do you think? I think anything where the tool itself can be pretty easily built and that's the main value, that kind of stuff will just naturally gravitate toward open source, because you might spend, you know, $20 on tokens to generate it the first time, but then once you know what it is, it's easy for somebody else to point another bot at that thing and watch it and kind of disentangle it and recreate it. So that kind of would suggest that every piece of software like that is going to end up being, you know, trending toward open source over time. But I do think there are, you know, certain types of products like that will end up, the way you use it generates a data set which compounds to make the tool better. And I think when you're in that kind of situation, those things may stay closed. So imagine if this tool, I wouldn't propose that this tool is necessarily in that category, but imagine that in this tool, you know, based on how people write queries or prompts on a video collection, it is able to prioritize which clips, and it makes the clips, and then it consumes the clips and sees how many of those consumption events are successful and seem to give the person what they want. And there's like a kind of a data flywheel that set of interactions might create. And that might suggest that even if you recreate the tool, if you don't have that data, if Ashu or whoever were building this were to create that data flywheel without keeping it proprietary, or sorry, without making the data open source, then it may trend toward a closed source version. But I think we're going to see, you know, that's more like the, you know, 1-2% case of software. I think we're going to see a lot more of these kinds of tools trend toward open source.
But to be clear, I think what I'm asking is like, what is the form factor? I think this kind of gets to some of this in the past, like, which is like, what is GitHub for vibe coding? Like, if Oshie wants to open source and just say, hey, I want this to be, I'm not trying to monetize whatever, I just want this to be maximally valuable for the world. I mean, if you put it on GitHub, I guess the agents will be able to scrape it and kind of read it. Or like, but I guess what I'm getting at is there going to be like a new, is it a skills repository? Is it something where it's like the lowest friction way for the AI to figure out whatever the value is in that thing he created and do it for someone else? I don't know what that's going to look like.
Right. A friend of mine was kind of brainstorming this idea around like, what does Git look like in an agent world? Like if you were to rebuild all the foundations of how Git works, but you did it assuming that agents were going to be collaborating on things together, they were going to have some semantic understanding to do their own kind of merge kind of conflict analysis. There's stuff that you can do now that wasn't really possible in sort of the way GitHub was structured, let alone the fact that you need like a, you know, a auth token and probably a Google auth account and an email and password. It kind of has a bit of like the old school not agent friendly workflows. You could imagine, you know, rebuilding a Git tool to be agent friendly, then building something like a GitHub for agents, and it actually doesn't require a login in the same way. It uses kind of private public key pairs, and maybe has, you know, obviously Bitcoin payments is a natural fit for something like that. So I do think that like the hub or the tools that agents would use to collaborate is probably going to undergo some evolution. But I think separately, there's kind of like, do these Claw Hub things, are those like a set of things, or do like Claude skills? Those feel like some emergent categories. I think Vercel has some sort of skills.sh or something. It's another kind of hub or collection of things that can be done in sort of contained ways. So I would be looking at all of those to see if those look like they're promising kind of directions for what you're saying. But I don't think we really know what the way. I think the way is kind of being created. And every time a new tool comes around, it creates a potentially new way to think about the whole thing. Is it a skill? Is it a plugin? Is it a new hub? You know, all kinds of open questions.
And it seems like, for builders, this is like one of the most fertile things you can explore, because it's basically like, who not necessarily owns, because it could be open. I don't know where value is created in cruise, but like whoever figures out how to coordinate the like evolution and buildup of knowledge over time, like that's valuable.
Yeah.
That's like the real Moltbot, right? Like I think on the show I said Moltbot is kind of like performance art.
Yeah.
And I would sort of stand by that. I think the real Moltbot is something more like agents collaborating with each other on solving the problems they're trying to solve versus just like, you know, shitposting.
Also having some kind of like make sure like an audit trail is A, still possible,
mm-hmm.
and B, agent friendly, but allowing humans to use their own agent to go audit the changes over time of the code base.
Totally.
In case things go awry. So
totally. And that to me also is one of the things I remain so bullish on Nostr for, because you already have like identity is just the public private key pair. So whatever that sort of chain of history is with Git or whatever, you need a private key to validate this was like really who we said, who we thought it was. And it just seems like Nostr is just like set up for that. I mean, if I were a Nostr builder right now, that like the future of Git on Nostr is something I'd be playing a lot with.
Yeah, I think that's interesting too. A couple other quick things I wanted to announce. Next Thursday is this month's builder here at PB in San Francisco. It's going to be all about OpenClaw. So in case people haven't heard of that yet, it's going to be all about OpenClaw, covering, you know, what all it can do, but also security concerns and angles as well. So if you're in the Bay Area, please come out for that.
If you're not, come on in.
Well, but if you're on the East Coast, let's say in or near New York City, a little bit more alpha. I'm not sure if Haley posted this yet, so I might be preempting her big announcement. But we're Haley and Matt Belez and I are going to host a builder New York City.
Oh,
nice.
In March.
All right. That's exciting.
Is March 11th a Wednesday? I think whatever the Wednesday is that week, I think it's March 11th. And if you're interested in this, just be on the lookout.
Where are y'all going to do it?
PubKey.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do they do? Like, so, I mean, PubKey's a bar. I still haven't gone to PubKey. I need to, but.
Oh, you haven't been there. Yeah.
I haven't been in New York.
So when you walk into PubKey, the first room is, you would think it has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It just looks like a dive bar.
Yeah.
A cool New York City dive bar. If you look around, there's some details there that speak Satoshi and stuff. But then if you go to the next room, the back room, that's a modest or like a medium sized space where you can hold events. And then they have another like secret room too that you can, that's even cooler.
Ooh, that's where all the magic happens.
Yeah.
The Bitcoin gets generated.
So, yeah. PubKey is a cool location. So that's where it's going to be at. What our goal is just introduce New York to Builder and what it is and what it can be. We'll obviously all be just visiting once. So we'll moderate it and organize it. But our hope is to inspire folks in New York who think it's awesome and who want to put the time in to do it regularly to do that. So
that's great.
Hopefully we'll succeed at that.
Sounds fun.
Would you have to recruit like a typical caretaker? Like who would sort of drive it forward, or do you have somebody in mind already who might be taking that on?
Well, I mean, the nice thing about those meetups is you don't have to be super in the weeds on Bitcoin. You don't have to be super technical. So, you know, it's really just someone who is good at organizational skills, has at least reasonable communication skills. If you're going to be up moderating and, you know, you want to get the audience engaged and, you know, committed and excited about it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, that's it's not like a highly specialized skill. It's just like one or two people who really love the idea, want to help make it happen in New York and make it succeed. So
I love it.
Yep. And we're gonna cover so Matt Belez will be there. So, you know, supreme vibe coder. He'll demo one or two things of his latest creations and speak to that. And I'm gonna give a presentation on agentic payments.
Ooh.
And then facilitate a discussion. So my presentation will be 10 or 20 minutes, but then most of the time, you know, spend a good 40 plus minutes with the audience just talking about it.
I love it.
Should be good.
Great. Sounds like a great format.
Which is a good segue.
Let's jump in.
Let's talk about agentic payments now.
Yeah.
And that you guys can help me create the presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so yeah, to tee this one up, I was going to mention we did miss our pod last week, but the day before we had spent the whole day in a hackathon at Presidio Bitcoin. We all built a bunch of cool projects, and the project that Steve was kind of spearheading opened up a lot of these questions, and I felt like I was like partially involved, and I don't feel like I could quite articulate or explain all the differences between what is the MDK agentic wallet or other ways to do this with Bitcoin, and what is the Stripe announcement and their USDC stuff, and what is the Coinbase on Base announcement, and how do all these things play? What are the trade-offs? What are the, you know, kind of a structured, kind of, you know, grounded, structured view of what, how this actually works?
And before we jump into that, I'm very excited to hear about that. But I think one meta point that is very important, and maybe we can talk about some other learnings from the hackathon afterwards. But one thing maybe you guys should consider doing is a mini hackathon in New York while you're there. One thing that I think was very eye-opening for me and for everyone that participated is we had, I don't know how many people presented, like 15, 20. It was a lot.
20.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I think the big idea, kind of like you were saying with Ashu, is anyone can now participate in a hackathon.
Even Max Webster.
Even me.
Max become passionate
actually,
about this.
Yeah, actually, let's give kudos to Max.
Yeah.
Stepping up. Anyone watching our show for the past year, Max is always like, you know, oh, I'll get to it. And he never got to it. In the past month, you've gotten to it. And you,
it's like, I have the elite ideas, but no patience.
Yeah.
Well, now right. You don't even need the patience. Not, yeah.
You don't even need the patience.
And
the elite ideas are out there living. And even Max, TK acknowledges.
I think Max is the only one of the 20 who delivered two projects.
Yeah.
And like, I thought it was the first one.
Cool. They were cool.
The first
projects.
One is cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Describe.
Well, it's live still. I mean, there was some like debugging that needed to happen afterwards. I certainly, I don't have the patience for that yet, but it was called lootdrop.com, LOOTDROP.com. You can go find it right now. And it was inspired by this thing Anjali found on Instagram where some dude goes around the Bay Area and just like shows a video of them taking $100 or whatever it is and just pasting it somewhere in the Bay Area. And then people go, it's like a treasure hunt. They try and find it. And I was like, it'd be super cool to do that with Bitcoin. It'd be a lot easier to do that with Bitcoin. So yes, all you do is a super simple app. You don't even need apps. By the way, that's something else we want to talk about. I think like apps are dead. All I did was just create a website, go to your phone. There's two buttons, drop loot or pick up loot. And either one is just a photo. So you drop loot, take a photo, you drop some loot there, and then you post that photo automatically to a Nostr profile. So it just gets pushed out to anyone that wants to follow on Nostr. And if you go and take a photo in the same place, you get to claim your Bitcoin. And so I dropped a bunch of Bitcoin on there. A lot of people found it very quickly. Steve, who I got to say, always the best alpha tester. He drops some Bitcoin out there. He put some stats. We're still waiting for DK to zap any of these apps. But Steve puts his money where his mouth is, which I appreciate. People start claiming it. And then I put one very, very secret special one for 21,000 Bitcoin, 21,000 sats for those of you who don't know. And, when you test in prod like I do, because I don't even know what a staging environment is, and I likely never will. Bob quickly realized you could like use AI to hack it and stole the Bitcoin. So Bob's supposed to pay me those back for something else.
He earned.
To be fair, if you hack, you earn, I guess. But then I went back and worked with Claude Bot or Sat Bot. It was all with MDK's bot, all via Telegram. I re-downloaded Telegram just for this one occasion. And we just went back and forth, talked about it. We're adding in the background like geo hashing, so you can't use Bob's hack in the future. So it's a great app. If you want to play with it, you can play with it right now. Drop some Bitcoin, have your friends find it. It's a treasure hunt. And like, I didn't came in with nothing. I just sat down and I built like half of another app.
I forget, what did you use?
I just did everything with Satbot. So all MDK.
Okay.
Yeah. Ori.bot, ORI.bot. Download the app. You make stuff, you ship stuff, super damn easy. The only
you don't really download the app.
Well, okay, I had to download Telegram.
Ori's not an app though.
Well, for me, I'm very anti-Telegram.
I'm anti-Telegram too, but...
One day, Nick and his guys will get us on Signal or WhatsApp because I'm not going to be using Telegram. But I did for this one occasion, and... apparently other people in the know don't use Telegram as well. I'm not going to out them, but real ones don't use Telegram. It was super easy. And what was also easy is because it's MDK, you got the payments already integrated from step zero. I didn't have to explain anything. The one tricky part, which I know Nick and team are going to have a solution to, the only things that makes, and by the way, this is why I'm so bearish on any app. Like I stand by, like, unless you're, you know, Anthropic, OpenAI, X, or Google, let's see where things go, because Replit, everyone's like, oh, Replit's so awesome. And it is awesome, but like now this was easier and better than Replit, just doing everything with Ori.bot. The only feature that Replit has, which is sick, is buy a domain name with your credit card, super simple, and host. I still had to go, and thanks to Matt Futz with Vercel for hosting, and still point out DNS. But Nick's going to solve that. So hopefully soon MDK will take care of that, you know, domain name and hosting. And at that point, why would I ever go back to Replit? Ever. It's all just a wrapper for Claude.
Yeah, so. I've gone from like super bullish to not bearish, but like I've backed off my bullishness on Replit just with the evolution of what we're seeing. Like basically what you just said.
Yeah.
But anyway, great job. I honestly thought yours was one of the coolest steps built.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
Agreed. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And yeah, like Max said, we had 20 people participate. It was you know, we did a hackathon here last May that was like AI and Bitcoin. And it was a overnight, like 24-hour hackathon. I think we had like 30 or so participants, but we put a lot of effort into organizing that. We had a big prize pool, I think like $15,000-$16,000, something like that. We had we had big sponsors like Lightspark,
like MVP.
I forget who. Anyway, I mean, a good amount of time was put into that, and it was successful. It was good. There was very little time organizing this.
Yeah.
And it was just from like 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., you know, not overnight, not 24 hours. And yet we had almost as many participants. The quality of what was built probably was on par with last May.
Or better.
Or better. Oh, and that's not because the quality of the people were better. It's the tools have advanced so much from last May till now.
So much.
That allows us to move faster. So I really liked the lightweight aspect of organizing that. Everyone who attended, I thought it was worth their time to take sort of a day off their regular job and build. Also, I was really excited. You know, people who have followed our show know that here at PBE, we care very much not just attracting people who would identify as Bitcoiners, but also broader tech people, AI folks, and we put on events to do that. I was happy that a couple people who participated were longtime Silicon Valley, you know, tech veterans. They would not, they're not Bitcoin haters, but they wouldn't identify as Bitcoiners, and they came, they really enjoyed it. They thought it was worth their time. So I think that's like a really good sign that we're going to attract folks like that in the future.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the big message I would hammer home to people is one of, frankly, hope and positivity, because literally anyone, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested enough in these like topics of technology, you are able to build an app right now using Ori.bot. It like really, there is no excuse at this point. And I think what was the coolest thing to me is, you know, people are freaking out like, oh no, the jobs are gone. It's like, yeah, that's the downside. The jobs that you don't want to do are gone. But on the upside, there were 20 people that presented and every single person had something interesting. Like, I think like my like kind of hope and positivity is every person is unique. And I always go back to Kevin Kelly saying, don't try and be the best at something, you're going to lose. But just be unique. Just everyone has their own sets of weird, be the only.
Be the only. Yeah.
Their own preferences, their own ideas. And like, it was very cool to see what happens when you know, in the past, it used to be this like, you know, like divine cast of, ooh, the developers. And like, oh, I have this great idea, but the developers, they're too busy. And it takes 3 weeks. And it's like, what are the developers actually doing? Right. But now, it's like those tools put in everyone's hands, that cast is gone. And all of a sudden, you know, you're going to see like the early days of the internet, you see billions of weird and bizarre niche long tail apps because everyone's weird and bizarre in their own way. And it's just awesome. Like, so that to me was the most hopeful thing is everyone has a unique idea. And we saw 20 for 20 ship a unique idea that day.
So Now we'll get back to what DK wanted to hear about, which is the project I worked on. And in some ways, it's a lot like the project that Miles Suter worked on almost a year ago. Like, Miles got really into vibe coding, I think it was like March, April timeframe last year.
He's early, yeah.
And Miles is, you know, he's not a programmer, had never written code previously, and he discovered the power of vibe coding around that timeframe. And it was really fun, and we talked about it in the show a little bit around that time, because it was cool watching his journey. And he's able to build a self-custody wallet that supported Bitcoin and other stable coins and a variety of coins. And you know, I think over the span of like 3 or 4 weeks, which at the time was astounding that he could do it because he had no programming background. I had different goals, and I'll speak to my goals in a second, but I basically did what he did in a few hours. And again, I say that not because I'm better than him. It's all about the tools. The tooling's gotten so much better that, what took several weeks, which was amazing at the time, less than 1 year later, can now be done in a few hours. So I created,
when he was doing that, if I recall, he was using Replit, which was probably
using Lovable. Okay. For the front end and Supabase on the back end.
And then for your project that you're about to tell us about, what was your tooling?
Ori.bot.
You don't need anything else?
Because I wanted my goals here, I wanted to test out agentic payments, which is the meat of what we're going to talk about here. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to test out group vibe coding.
Yeah.
Because we have been playing with Ori.bot for 3+ weeks. Maybe 3 weeks now.
Is that it?
I don't know. It feels like a month. Feels like a lifetime. But
2 weeks ago was the Ori.bot episode, right? Where like our whole PBGA was basically.
And I think we started six. So it's not. We quite started before 3 weeks, yeah. But it's basically 3 weeks. We've been playing with it.
Yep.
And with the original one in Signal,
that's right.
There's one special Signal group chat has Satbot, Ori's father.
Yeah. The original, the OG.
And we've done group vibe coding in that, but we do all kinds of stuff in that group chat. That group chat is like, you know, off the charts in terms
unhinged.
Of, I you know, we historically we talk about, what'd you say?
Unhinged.
Oh, unhinged. It's unhinged.
There is no hinge.
But what's the, I was thinking about so, you know, signal to noise ratio, that's like, that's a thing, right?
And I see what you did there.
But what I'm finding, I'm declaring bankruptcy on so many different messaging platforms just in the past month. And it's not because the signal to noise ratio gets bad.
Right.
It's all signal. But the amount of signal is overwhelming me. There's so much high quality people, content, bots, information, and it's too much. So it's not a bad signal to noise ratio. It's just like too much signal.
Yeah.
Anyway,
like you need a seat bot.
Sounds like you need to go down to first.
So we've
Street.
Done group vibe coding in that group chat, but we've done a million other things. I wanted to experiment with, you know, keeping the scope to having a group chat with Matt, DK, and me, and Ori. And the only thing we were going to chat about in that group chat was to build a project and get that experience. So that's another reason I used Ori. So, in any case, and by the way, I think as far as the tooling from people from that hack day, I think the two of us, Max, were the only ones that used Ori.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which, and by using Ori, I mean, it's Claude Opus 4.6 is the model. Yeah. But I think we did a survey. Most people used Claude Code. A couple used Replit. One or two used Codex. Yeah. But it was mainly Claude Code. In any case, what was the primary goal, though? I wanted to not just recreate what Miles did a year ago and just like demonstrate a self-custody wallet. I wanted to test out agentic payments. So I started with a Bitcoin wallet. I used MDK. I'd already built numerous applications with MDK. I knew how slick it was. So I created that. And then... Actually,
can we first just define the terminology? Like when we say agentic payments or an agent wallet, What do we mean by that being different than a developer using something and just creating a wallet? Is it that the agent has the 12 words, or what does it mean exactly?
Yep. Well, I did this in two phases. One, I just did traditional payments, and then the second demo I wanted to create was what I would call like agentic payment, which was like an agent paying a service
without a human involved.
Right. Well, in this case, I asked one agent to go use a service and pay for it, which was built by and run by another agent.
Okay.
But to start, like the first step was just like, can I set up? Because I did more than just a Bitcoin wallet. I did a different, because a goal here, I didn't want to just do agentic payments with Bitcoin, but I wanted to test out stable coins and then compare and contrast. So I set up an MDK-based Bitcoin wallet. And so I did it, but I did it through an agent, right? I used Ori.bot to create that wallet. I then created a Spark wallet. I created a Tether WDK wallet initially for Tether on Tron and then Tether on Ethereum. So I had both of those wallets. I created a Coinbase agentic wallet, I think. Now you're going to ask me, DK, what does that mean? I used their developer platform. I created a USDC on Base wallet. Whether that there's different flavors of agentic or not, I have no idea. But I created a USDC on Base wallet, which I want to get into in a little bit. And then I didn't complete Stripe stuff. Like AI struggled more with Stripe.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because part of one of the measurements I was going to look at is like, how easy is it to like onboard as a developer slash agent, like to create this wallet. And like MDK and Bitcoin, trivial. Tether WDK, trivial.
What does WDK stand for?
Wallet Development Kit.
Okay.
Those were very easy to get set up.
I just learned about it, by the way. Can we, just to clarify, I think WDK supports, it's built by the Tether org, and I think it supports USDT on a couple, and then does it also support Bitcoin and Lightning natively?
It supports Bitcoin. It supports Lightning via Spark. It supports Tether on a number of platforms. It supports Gold.
How does it do that?
Well, Tether has a gold token.
I thought they were going to put money.
And it's doing that. And you don't have a KYC process to get a WDK developer kit, right? You're just
correct.
Okay.
So it definitely was very trivial to use, set up, permissionless, no KYC. So from that perspective, it was really good. So Bitcoin is good. That was good.
And when you say set it up, did you actually register for any accounts or anything? Or did you just say, hey, Ori.bot, go create a wallet?
The latter. I mean, I forget my exact prompt, but I mean, I basically said like create a Tether WDK wallet.
So you didn't go to any websites. You didn't do anything manually. You literally just in your Telegram chat told the bot to go do stuff and it did it.
Yep.
I mean, that's a big deal right there.
That's a big deal. Yep.
So it was very, very simple. And that's why I'm saying, like, compared to what Miles had to do a year ago, I don't know exactly what he had to do, but, you know, it took him many hours.
Yeah.
So we've gone from, like, a person is unable to do it because they don't have the skills,
right,
to it takes them dozens of hours, but they can do it, to you one shot in English, you just speak a sentence and you have it. It's just incredible.
It's freaking awesome.
So anyway, created these wallets. Initially, the first demo was just like creating, put them all on a website and then just like tested basic traditional payments with them to prove they worked. One big hiccup, which I was already aware of, but it was even worse than I thought, is with stable coins, just the pairs are, the explosion of stable coin pairs is just ridiculous. And by pairs, I mean, you have which currency, you have which issuer, you have which platform. So, you know, is it USDC on Ethereum or USDC on Solana or USDC on Base. Since that, just yesterday I learned there's also USDC on Base that's bridged, and there's USDC on Base that's native.
What does that even mean?
So I was collaborating with a couple other people and AI to learn more about the unilateral exit capabilities of Base, because I worry that Coinbase's Base platform is going to be, Dino? Decentralized in name only.
Oh, yeah.
meaning, you know, it's positioned as and marketed as decentralized and everything, but
decentralization theater.
I worry that it's going to be completely controlled by Coinbase. So I was looking into unilateral exit, and there are unilateral exit. It's like kind of there, but not really. So if you have so USDC on Base that's bridged means it's USDC might exist on Ethereum, layer one Ethereum, and then you can bridge it into Base with a token, much like wrapped Bitcoin. And this isn't a novel concept. This has been around for many years, but you know, you have a token on Base then that represent one for one represents the asset on layer one Ethereum, and you're trusting that you can unwrap it and get back to Ethereum, layer one. So that was the first USDC token on Base. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, Circle started issuing USDC native on Base, and that's directly on Base. There's no bridging. The gotcha with that, though, is that you can't unilaterally exit. So if you have native USDC tokens on Base, they are native to Base. There's no representation outside of Base. So you're very much in the Base world and arguably the Coinbase world with those tokens.
Does Base have any decentralization theater, or is it just like Coinbase's database?
There's definitely
some substance.
Myself and a few others that were looking at this, unable to find an authoritative source that formally describes that they do have unilateral exit.
What would unilateral exit mean in this case? Because my understanding would be that, let's say USDT, that the Tether organization holds a U.S. treasury that's supposed to back the USDT, like $1 of treasury to back the $1 of USDT. If you then bridge that somewhere, how can you get that out besides getting the Tether org to agree that you still have access to that backed treasury?
I mean, there's different layers here. Let's stick with the... I think I can answer your question by sticking with USDC instead of Tether, but because USDC has the same properties, right?
Yep.
Like Coinbase, Circle, they hold US treasuries to back those tokens, just like you described for Tether. So when I say unilateral exit, I'm not referring to actually getting a $10 bill in my hand. I'm referring to having a token that is on the layer one chain that I control the private keys to that wallet, as opposed to it being on a layer two, like Base.
So it's the exit from two, it's the unilateral exit from two back to one?
Yeah. That's what I'm referring to.
That's what it is. Okay.
Now, when you're analyzing the whole system, in trying to understand where you're trusting things, of course, you're
trusting
with any stable coin. You're also trusting that Circle, Coinbase, Tether, et cetera, don't freeze your coins as well. But okay. I'm talking specifically trying to understand Base.
Really quickly, I don't want to take us too far off the subject, but why is Base even a layer two? What does that even mean? I thought.
I think we talked about this last year about... I might be wrong, but I thought Brian Armstrong said that they're basically turning into a layer one.
That's what I thought.
Maybe I misremember that.
I thought I saw a recent headline about how they're getting off Ethereum or something.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm referring to. So I'd like to that's go follow. Is that rumor or is it, did he actually say that? Are they actually doing it? I don't know. But I mean, it makes sense to me because your question is spot on that it doesn't really make, it's just evolved into, it might as well be, it's only layer one.
It's evolved from Ethereum to a MySQL database, which is where all things.
Yeah. Well, so you asked, is there any substance behind it? I mean, it's, you know, it's a zero knowledge proof roll up mechanism. There's at least, it's unclear what's been coded and is real versus what's on a roadmap or theory. But in theory, you can unilaterally exit to Ethereum. But obviously, if they make it a layer one and move off of Ethereum, which I'm still not clear if they're actually doing that or not, but then what are you exiting to? But even if they don't do that, my point is with native USDC, you can't exit to layer one because it is natively issued on layer two and it doesn't exist outside of that. So
I would just like to reassert the claim I made many times. I think it's very important. The only innovation in crypto outside of Bitcoin was confusing regulators. I stand by that.
So let me tie this back to agentic payments and what's right. going to be used for that. Because, you know, we all like Bitcoin. We like the properties of Bitcoin. We hope it succeeds long term, short term and long term. But because we think it's the best money, we think it doesn't advantage any particular country, region, company, fair and neutral, and yada, yada, yada. So, but just because it objectively has those properties and we want that to happen, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, right? So one thing we have talked about in the show for a year now is, but like, why is it going to win in the short term? Why would someone use Bitcoin for online payments, for agentic payments, et cetera, versus stablecoins, right? And we've evolved our answers there. We've never had like super crisp, super concrete answers. I do think we've improved our thinking there and it just continues to improve. And so let's talk about it. I mean, one reason that I feel strongly about is Coinbase is obviously pushing for USDC on Base. It is, to the degree it succeeds, it'll be a cash cow for Coinbase because they make, for every USDC dollar that they issue, they're the ones that hold the US treasuries. They earn all of the yield on that.
And they presumably earn fees too, right?
And they earn fees off of Base, right? So it would be a double cash cow for them if the whole economy moves to that. So imagine a world where all the internet payments, AI or no AI,
right,
all flows through that. That's great for Coinbase shareholders. But it's frankly, it's a far worse world than what we live in today. I mean, today we have thousands of banks globally. I mean, it's way more decentralized than that world. So I think that's like a very scary world and in a world that we don't want to head in. Now, there's other big players, Stripe, Visa, Google, et cetera, who are also vying and jockeying for position. So we've talked about that before. It'll be difficult for any one of them to break out and dominate because they're all so powerful. But if one dominates, that's a horrible outcome for the world, I think.
Yeah.
If 4, 5, 6 of them are all strong players and carve out market share but aren't compatible with each other, that's super fragmented. So to me, that's one of the huge reasons why Bitcoin, it's an advantage of Bitcoin. It's still not super clear to me, though, why short-term decision-making will choose Bitcoin. And when I say short-term decision-making, I mean if you're a builder, if you're a seller or a consumer, whether you're offering a service or whether you're wanting to pay for something, why are you choosing Bitcoin over USDC on Base, for example? And I just worry that if there's you know, if it's lower fees or better dev UX or whatever for USDC and Base, that that will lead to people choosing that. And I don't know how you sell people on this like longer term strategy concern.
Well, so I have a lot of thoughts around that, but what did you learn from all your testing?
So the stablecoin pairs is just a total nightmare from a consumer standpoint.
I thought stuff like Bridge fixes this, no? Like they're an exchange between them.
So for example, I created a USDC on Base wallet. It was not as easy as MDK or Tether to set up, but it wasn't. I had to go log into my Coinbase account and do various things. I mean, it still wasn't that hard, but there were barriers and I had to log into Coinbase to do it. But it wasn't that bad. But then I went to pay the wallet just to make sure it actually worked. And I had some USDC on Phantom and MetaMask. Just playing around with those wallets. I pointed to the same wallet.
You have Phantom and MetaMask?
Oh, yeah. DK and I did an experiment 2 years ago. So I still have those wallets. And I have USDC, but I have USDC on Ethereum. So then I couldn't send it to this wallet. And that's when I learned that. Okay. So then I'm like, all right, so I need to get USDC on Base. But then to make the payment, I had to pay gas fees. And then I'm like, oh, great. Well, I already have Ethereum in this wallet to pay gas fees. But no. I learned that there is also Ethereum on Base. And I need
what the fuck does that even mean?
Well, to pay gas
fees.
You
mean ETH on Base?
Yeah.
Like that.
But so which is different than layer. So I already had layer one Ethereum, but I needed Base Ethereum to pay the fees to make a Base transaction.
What is Base? But Base Ethereum, let's be clear, is just they call something ETH.
It's some token on.
Which is, Base. But it's Base.
Yeah. So I had to do swaps and bridges and all this stuff, which the UX and MetaMask and Phantom is pretty good for that because that's optimized for traders.
Right.
So I was able to do it, but still. Normal human beings understanding all these different pairs and platforms and stuff is like ridiculous. It's horrible user experience. And then it's annoying to have to do it. Right?
What about for the agents? Let's say we don't care. Like humans
yeah, I think
are
the,
irrelevant.
It's kind of the question to answer around all this. How will the agents see this?
Yeah. Like, was it confusing for the agent or is the agent just like, whatever, like in the background, I can do all the swaps?
It's a good question. I mean, I did all the stuff manually and I didn't try to get the agent to do it. I'm not sure if there are services out there to do those swaps that agents can use. I don't know. Because I did it from MetaMask and Phantom.
For your presentation, I think it'd be interesting if you do the human experience, but just like agent only. Like what happens if I'm just talking to the agent? Like what roadblocks they run into? Because I think that's the one that matters.
Yeah, I agree. I should have done that. So I'll do that. But yeah, that from a human consumer perspective, that's such a bad user experience. And that's where I think Lightning shines, because Lightning allows for a very simple user experience, no matter which technology you're using on Bitcoin. You could be using a Lightning wallet or a Cashew wallet or a Fediment wallet or an Arc wallet or a Spark wallet, all these different technologies. And like, yeah, consumers don't need to know what any of that is, what I just said.
Right.
They're just sending and receiving Bitcoin and they're all interoperable. You can be using Arc, I can be using Spark, and we don't need to know that. We don't need to care. And yet we can pay each other and we're not having to do bridges and swaps or anything like that.
I want to make this call because I feel like I make this call once a year. And shout out Nick actually showed me someone did a decent version of this finally. I still think there's a huge opportunity for someone to build a Lightning Network native exchange that bridges between Bitcoin and all the stuff you just talked about, the Sparks and the Cashews and all that, with all of the shitcoin chains where you can actually put Lightning on them natively. So any chain that supports HTLC, Solana, Ethereum, I have no idea about Base. Like in theory, you should be able to build a Lightning Network bridge to all of these, suck all of the value out of the crap chains into Bitcoin and only do real-time swaps when you need them to pay an invoice. I think if someone can do that, make it super slick experience for the agents at this point, that would be... I think there's a really promising company somewhere in there.
Dude, we've got a weekend coming up.
I'm heading back to New Orleans.
Are you?
No.
Oh. I wouldn't put it past you.
No.
One of the big things though, Steve, that kind of I guess the pairs being hard to swap and match properly feels like one big thing. But another thing is, my understanding is you need to have like a Coinbase developer account and be KYC'd with Coinbase, and then you can have Coinbase launch these agentic wallets. But what does it mean to be agentic versus if it's just my account anyway? What are we gaining by having an agentic wallet?
I'm not sure, but well, what do we get? Yeah, I'm not sure about the, you're right, the Coinbase has that barrier. I already mentioned I had to be logged in to do it, but like Tether, I did not, right? So.
Meaning the WDK?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I
don't know what the framing of the question is, but if it's, is Bitcoin unique and alone in offering this? No. With Tether, I was able to permissionlessly, easily from an agent, create a wallet and do stable coins. Whereas I was not with Coinbase. If your question is more about like around is it agentic or not,
it's kind of like if I, you know, let's say, you know, 5 years ago I had a Stripe account and I was KYC'd with Stripe. I had a merchant account and I'm a developer and I can build a website and I could choose to build a marketplace website or an e-commerce website, or I could choose to build a server that launches little tasks whenever I want. And I can call those like little agents. So in what way are those agents using my Stripe account different than an agentic wallet that uses my Stripe account?
Yeah. Well, so like with Coinbase, not only did I have to log in, but I could only create one wallet.
Yeah.
And so with Tether and with MDK and with Lexi, you can spin up an unlimited number of wallets and assign each to an agent, sub-agent, et cetera.
I think the short answer right now is it's not, but it should be very different. And so, I mean, you should at the very least, the fact they don't let you have like sub-accounts at the very least, where you can have like for each of your processes or agents has its own budget, that's crazy to me. That's like very behind the times. That's like table stakes. But in my mind, it comes down to speed and like frequency of transactions. Like if you have like an old school human wallet, you're doing like, I do one payment, I do another payment. Like even if you have a human account and then you have an agentic account, to me, the agentic thing is you need to be able to do like 100,000 transactions in like a second. Like
but
imagine.
The speed or frequency of transactions seems less important than the fact that like an agent could exist on its own without being connected to me or anybody else. And it could earn its keep. It could make its own money. It could create its own wallet. It could do its own tasks, fund its own LLM development. Like all of these things should be able to be done without me. And when I hear agentic wallet, I'm imagining something like that. And anything where it's really just like a wallet I launch on my account feels to me like we've had that for like a decade.
Well, so I think those are two separate areas, right? And like, yes, I think where we're going is, so when people say, I think there's agentic and then there's like actually agentic, which to me is autonomous agentic. And I got dunked on by Matt in the group chat today. But if you guys haven't listened to my ideas from the edge, I got to talk my book here with Drew Bansal. We did discuss this in grave detail a year ago, of like what it would mean like for an agent to be living on its own. And for that, I mean, yes, what you're talking about, where you want this to go, you need to be able, I mean, basically what it comes down to is like, can you set up from chat without KYC? Because right. if you need a human KYC, then obviously an autonomous agent right. cannot do it because they don't have, you know, and then that gets to a much deeper philosophical question, which is, you know, in this autonomous agentic world where we're headed, who's the liability sink? That's the big right. question that we have not yet answered as a society. Where is the liability yep. sink? But even in the short term, even with what Steve's testing, there is a, let's call it like middle ground agentic thing, which is, even if the human is the KYC human is the liability sink and they want to have a lot of different agents, from my understanding, it sounds like the Coinbase developer account couldn't even support, oh, I want, you know, 100,000 wallets doing 100,000 transactions a second, which is that middle ground to me.
But TK, I just want to make sure I'm clear. I think I did prove with Tether and MDK that you can have an agentic wallet. I mean, I typed in, go create this wallet. But there was nothing in my prompt that it couldn't have thought of and done itself, right? Yeah. Whereas Coinbase did have these barriers. Now, I'll caveat all this experiments I've been doing. I think Coinbase has many offerings. So maybe I was using the wrong one, or I was just using one of many. So I'd call these like preliminary results comparing all all this stuff. I do think we, you know, Tether showing how permissionless it was, I think that with stablecoins, I don't think we can just fall back. I think Bitcoiners would be lazy to fall back or misguided to just say like, oh, Bitcoin's permissionless, no KYC, and stablecoins aren't. I do think it's an interesting conversation about the longevity.
Yeah.
Like, will Bitcoin resist it better than stablecoins? And I think the answer is probably yes. But again, this gets into like, okay, are we talking about long-term strategy but I think it's very interesting also to look through the lens of I'm a builder today trying to optimize my startup, my business, my product, and I don't care about 10-year projections or whatever. So through that lens, are they really going to be sold on, oh, Bitcoin's more resilient to regulatory pressure down the road? And I don't think it's a good sales pitch.
I agree. And so I think in the short run, it's about speed and permissionless. You need to be able to, from the chat, get up and running and start making money. Now, it sounds like Tether can compete with Bitcoin on that for now. But then my question comes back. So like in that case where you gave Tether a wallet, and I guess it's got, is USDT on Tron or?
Yeah, I couldn't, I forget what problem I ran into, but I had no immediate way to have USDT on Tron.
Okay.
Because Phantom and MetaMask don't support it, I think.
So it was
I don't remember. One of them do support it, and I bridged into that, and then it got stuck. In fact, I should check. It's probably a week later, still pending. That's the only like swap or bridge I've ever tried in one of those apps that did not work. Usually it's a good user experience, but it got stuck and pending. So then I created the Tether on Ethereum just to test it out.
And that worked.
Yeah.
So,
but I still needed, it worked, but you need Ethereum for gas.
So there's this speed question, and you know, every additional friction obviously slows things down, although maybe for the agents, not that much of a friction if it needs to get the ETH or whatever. But then my question becomes, okay, like, and maybe the answer is like, you need to go through another shitcoin cycle, and they're not going to come until those get rug pulled. My question is, if you have an agent, you're giving them USDT on Ethereum either, whatever you got working, what happens? Let's say the agent does something that, whatever, it gets in trouble for. Who's the liability sink in that world? They don't have any tie to you, do they? I guess if they really wanted to, they could go see like what server is this running on, blah, blah, blah. But like,
we don't really have agent infrastructure that is not tied to some KYC, right? Like
you could run a Claude bot on a Mac Mini and then.
But who owns the Mac Mini? Is that you? Is that in the cloud?
But let's walk through exactly what I did to see where identity is revealed. So I went to ori.bot and registered, and I provided my email address there. So that is one piece of identity that I gave away. I, you know, if I actually cared about privacy, I could give it an email address that is far less tied to my identity.
And presumably an agent could sign up for an email. I think I thought we even had a service that enables that or saw.
I think Ori uses SendGrid to do it.
No, it actually uses mailslurp.biz.
Right. That's right.
So
gotta get that slurp.
So, okay. So yes, AI could create its own email address, register for Ori bot. And then you can have an anonymous identity in a Telegram chat group with whatever privacy guarantees Telegram offers. But, you know, you can also imagine Signal where it's better privacy. And then, you know,
But as you prompt that bot, it needs to be backed by some credit card tied to a token generator. So I assume like Nick's credit card or the company's credit card right now does that.
Well, I mean, right now I think it's free, right? Because it's an alpha.
It's free because it's paid for by Nick's credit card, right?
Oh.
Free to you.
He's paying Claude, yeah.
Nick is paying, yeah.
You could just do an open source Claude on your Mac Mini. Yes, and then someone would eventually what's going to happen is the agent has to put it on lots of Mac Minis. But eventually, if they find your Mac Mini, then yeah, it's tied to you. You're the liability side.
But let's say Ori.bot graduates to production and they charge for the service, and customers are paying. And customers are paying though anonymously with Bitcoin.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So there's a path to get there.
Then, Then Ori creates this Tether wallet and does nefarious things.
Just to pause on that last one. If you were going to pay for tokens with Bitcoin, I think today an agent can't log into Claude and get an Opus 4.6 key by itself. Is that right? So does OpenRouter support such a thing where an agent could do it with just an email address and set up their own password and create their own flow, or is there other kind of gotchas there?
Are you talking about Ori.bot specifically or not Ori? Just
you just proposed that in the future, instead of Nick's credit card being tied to Claude, that the Ori bot could have its own account that gets funded by the person using it via Bitcoin.
I was saying that consumers will pay for Ori, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can pay in Bitcoin. The business behind Ori.bot can pay for Claude however they want. So I wasn't necessarily saying, I guess, so when we talk about I guess where I was going with this is, let's say there's millions of customers on Ori, and a handful of them do criminal behavior. Is Nick and his company liable for that? But in general, the answer is no, right? Or I don't know. You can look at Silk Road and the answer is yes. You look at Google and many other services that use Google Earth and do a criminal act, Google's not liable for that. So,
but if you're hosting illegal material on AWS, they're probably not liable, but that's probably because they have some arrangement where they're very responsive to legal enforcement takedowns or something like that.
I think, a lot of this, if you want the truly autonomous life, and you're going to have to go with the open source stuff is my view for now. Because as long as someone has to be Anthropic always can choose to no longer accept. However, if you're using the open source models, hosted, self-hosted, or eventually recursively backing themselves up on services like Maple or whatever, then that to me, that's where you can actually get autonomy. Agentic wallet. I like Vinny's idea too, that maybe registration is prepay this Lightning invoice. That would be really interesting. Yeah, you just had to put up 100,000 sats and you're off to the races.
So then just to wrap up what I did, the second demo I did, I created a very simple service. It flipped a coin and then I put a payment gate around that. So I had an agent create this coin flipping service and run it and charge money for it. I think it was 100 Bitcoin. And then I had the other agent use its different wallets to pay that. And it worked. So it worked for, it worked for Bitcoin. It also worked with Tether.
Yeah. So you got Tether in the agent's wallet? And then you were using it as an end user paying in Tether?
Yeah.
And that was through WDK?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Gambling is always the killer app there with Bitcoin. So I wouldn't be surprised if your coin flip service isn't doing numbers soon. It's called Dice Game. BTC. So one interesting question. Vinny's now asking, can we buy tokens from Maple AI with Lightning? Yes. Yes, you can. So if someone enterprising now, and actually what's also interesting from this week, it was a couple days ago, things are moving so fast. I don't even know. Albi released, they have, I guess, their own agentic wallet, which got a lot of traffic traffic when they sort of tweeted about this. One of, Peter Diamandis's future, whatever, Singularity co-host retweeted it, which got a lot of love. I want to say they said he maybe even Elon did. I don't know if I saw that. That would have been a big deal. But they had, Claude bot that gave birth to another Claude bot, was paying for its own services via Lightning. In that case, they were using PPQ.ai. I then asked if you really want this kind of like, if you really want this autonomy, you can't be using that centralized service. So I asked, could you do this with the T's, the trust execution environments, the secure elements with Maple? And then the Albi guys tried it and said that, you know, Maple, to your question, Vinny, is not, you can pay, I think they use one of just like the simple Lightning payment gateways to buy quote unquote tokens. But if you wanted to really have the agent do it itself, they're not really well suited for that yet. But it sounds like Anthony and Marks will ship something soon to make that much easier. So in theory, yes, you could do it again, not to toot my own horn, but if you go back and listen to the Drew episode, it's all step by step laid out there on how this next autonomy might go. And I think we have all the pieces once Maple ships the ability for bots to use their services themselves.
So one thing I really want to stress, if we want Bitcoin to win, I think we need to get sellers offering, online sellers,
yeah,
offering their services with Lightning as the payment protocol. Because with that, you can have wallets that are, obviously Lightning wallets can pay that. But again, Spark, Arc, Cashew, et cetera, but also like Cash App's demonstrated dollars on Lightning. So 60 million monthly active users on Cash App, all of whom have dollars in their wallet, can pay those Lightning invoices as well. So, we need this. If we can get seller adoption, then the consumers will come, right?
And I would even push and say, increasingly, my view is, I mean, it'd be great, anyone selling services for Lightning, yes, but selling services to the agents is what matters. Like figuring out what do the agents need to buy, which is why I'm pushing on Maple and all these guys, like make your service agent first. If they're buying, you know, digital resources, physical resources delivered digitally, bandwidth, compute, storage, whatever it is, we need all of that, what Dhruv calls the metabolic pathways, paid for with Lightning. So agent services paid in Lightning, those are huge opportunities for anyone trying to figure out what to build next, figure out what do the agents need to live, sell it to them in Lightning.
But we need to sell them on accepting Bitcoin through Lightning, yes, and not USDC on Base and other stuff. So
yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm not as worried about that. I mean, yes, I agree. And if we can make that and like skip the next shitcoin cycle, even if we don't, my view is that maybe we can't skip that. And we have to go through everyone using, like we did with like tokens and crypto. Maybe we have to go through one more cycle where everyone does the Tether or the Base first, then they get rugged either at, you know, one of the 50,000 layers, whether it's, you know, layer two, layer one, the treasuries. Like at some point, people will realize, oh, wait, I don't actually own this. It would be nice if we could skip that.
Well, I worry that you say rugged. I mean, when I hear rugged, I think all their money's stolen. And
that could happen too. But stolen that, but or just not, like a payment.
I don't think Coinbase is going to steal all their money. I think Coinbase is going to rent seek and be like the biggest monopoly in the world, or Stripe, or whoever wins the stablecoin game. And then, but it'll have tremendous network effects. So it won't be as easy as just everyone being like, oh, this, I don't like the latest fees here, I'm just going to switch over to Bitcoin. It won't be easy because like everyone will have adopted that payment protocol, not mm-hmm. the open money protocol. So I think it's very important,
right,
with urgency
that we get it now.
That we get it now.
I agree with you. But to be clear, when I say rugged, what I mean is until they and the agents or the humans want to do something that Base won't let them do. Like I kind of come back to like the killer app for Bitcoin as payments always has been permissionless. And so, you know, whether it happens now or in the future, there will be a time when agents want to do a thing and they say, you can't do this thing. And I think that we have to be ready. I mean, I would prefer we skip that whole phase. And if we can win on the marketing front and get all the agents using Bitcoin today, amazing. But if we don't...
Can we be concrete about like some of those ideas? Because I know in chat, I've shared a few things that I wish were more agentic. I think in the MDK chat, I think I saw that does there exist right now a way to register a domain, like an agent could register a domain with Bitcoin?
I mean,
without having any other registration?
Nick says he's working on it. I don't know, Nick, when live, we need it.
Okay, so I think that's a very good first test case of the thing, but are there others that come to mind? Like I was mentioning that I wish Vercel and Supabase were wrapped so that my agent could find them, update, you know, pay in Bitcoin if there are payments needed, and then can just update them. It can write, you know, execute SQL scripts on my behalf instead of me having to copy paste it into the web interface. I feel like that's like the massive problem that exists in the world. It's less about traditional e-commerce and more about how can agents find and use and pay for the services that they're going to want. Because I think the whole internet is just going to be agents. So let's just build for them, you know?
I agree. I mean, so domain registration, actual model usage or GPUs, storage. I think it's even stuff like Cloudflare. Is that even like agent first yet? Could that be wrapped? Like any web services either need to be wrapped or rebuilt.
What about like I want an email? Like a Proton mail from my agent?
Yeah.
That's already pretty easy to do? Or?
Well, so I think our call to action for people is we need to be building this stuff, right?
And I'm just trying to
if it's possible,
be more concrete about what this stuff is.
I agree with you. I'm trying to like,
yeah,
I agree. What you said, our call to action to people is to go build that. And if it can be a layer around existing stuff, great.
As a starting point,
but if it's not possible to like take existing stuff and add a, you know, we accept Bitcoin layer around it, then just replace that. And I think like with domain registrars, that's one thing that's being experimented with now is like, oh, they don't accept Bitcoin or there's some other like CAPTCHA or other problem. So instead of like trying to like beg and plead to them to change their stuff, just
build a new one
and vibe code it. And we'll see how that works. But
you need to be a registrar then, right? You need to get approved and into the inner circle of registrar access to record a new one.
Oh, are you in the MDK group?
I am. It was built
in minutes. There's like some open
as a wrapper or a
SRS API or something.
But is it live?
They need like a static IP address or it's some like
I will also push though. I think that's a great first step and people should be wrapping. And by the way, shout out to Jordy from FewSats. He was piloting this idea a year ago. I don't know where it ever went, but like buying domains agent only, I think it was just a little too early. But I do think if you kind of zoom out, it's hard to time all of this stuff. Step zero is get agents using the existing infrastructure. But also like you have to like say, okay, well, 5 years out, where's this going to go? And I come back to, again, I think now is getting close to the right moment to make sure we have your idea, DK, DNS on Bitcoin. Because anything that is a centralized choke point will eventually get choked. And so if the agents are now scooping up all the domains and ICANN, for whatever reason, says actually, sorry, agent, we're not going to honor yours. And that will happen. We don't know why it's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. But if you already have domain names ready tied to Bitcoin, that to me, that's an area I would really be exploring. DK has a spec. So if someone wants to build it, hit him up. Or actually, DK, why don't you just cloud code this thing?
I know. I've been revisiting that a little bit. I still will contend that it's really more of an economic proposal versus a technical implementation. And I've done a bunch of discussion with various LLMs around what would be good technical implementations. And I don't feel confident that it's coming up with the kind of thing I could put in front of like, I don't know, Greg Maxwell, and he'd be like, yep, this sounds smart to me. So I don't think it has the history or nuance of like, you know, how close is this going to be to something that, you know, is it going to bloat the blockchain? Is it going to be seen by the community of people who would be interested or developers involved? Would it look like it's spam? Right, would be like, is it using data on the blockchain in a careful way and keeping most of the data outside, for example? Right, like I just don't think I haven't in my pressing on the LM, I've not gotten it to a state where I'm like, oh, I like this answer. I want to bring this to people who I think should weigh in on it.
Have you gotten the LM to take on the persona of Greg?
I'm serious. I haven't tried that. That's not a bad idea, yeah.
Listen, Greg, obviously we all have a lot of respect, but he's a human. Like, honestly, when it comes to humans, AI is going to overtake him, everyone, real quick. So I think maybe we're not there and maybe we need 3 more months. But if not, like, just, I've seen more people also do this thing. If they'll get like, you know, take, you know, pretend one bot is Peter Willian, another bot is Greg Maxwell, and have them like duke it out together. Yeah.
So Vinny asked, do we know why online merchants don't accept Bitcoin? Is it technical, business, or regulatory? I mean, I think that's not a mystery. I mean, historically, it's been a large barriers to just integrate it. If you wanted to use open source like BTC Pay, that was possible, and like Namecheap and others do it, but it's not like Stripe for payments. You don't just drop it in. It also is on-chain only, which is a bad payment experience for a lot of different payment experiences because of the delays. So, I mean, that's a big reason why MoneyDevKit was created, is to make it the Stripe for Bitcoin payments. It supports Lightning, so it's super fast payment. And it's proven out. We've all built apps that use it and accept payments, and it was super easy. Check the box there. That's behind us now, that problem. Mm-hmm. But the second big problem is like no one's spending money in Bitcoin, right? So we who want to usher this into the world are going to keep pushing on it. But if you're a merchant, if you're selling stuff, there's little incentive to accept Bitcoin payments right now because no customers think to pay in Bitcoin, want to pay in Bitcoin. So, I mean, obviously
it's not worth prioritizing if customers are not.
That's the current hurdle.
But I think so much of that is we just need things you can only buy in Bitcoin. I think one of the best examples we have, DK, is your DNS thing, because it's like, it's a very clear value proposition. DNS for agents that can't be rugged. That's a big deal. A domain you actually own.
Why not pay in stablecoins?
Well, if it's Bitcoin native, it's just easier to do it in Bitcoin. No? I mean, maybe you could do it in stablecoins as well.
Tether, what's hard about Tether? Well, the main thing, the quick answer is like having to pay gas fees, having to also hold, if the agent has to hold also Solana or Ethereum or some other wallet just to pay gas fees, that is one reason. But what are other reasons?
Well, so I think there's two big reasons. One is if that stuff is KYC'd and this stuff is not, it sounds like Tether does not meet that.
It's not KYC.
But the other thing is like, if you're buying, I don't know exactly what your scheme is going to look like, but let's say, you know, one that Danny's like, you're buying like an ordinal that has like a domain name registered with or whatever it is. If you're already dealing in Bitcoin, why would you like add additional complexity? You could, but
you're talking about the sci-fi project again. So
yeah, but this sci-fi project is a way that I see Bitcoin taking off. But I don't think it's that sci-fi. I think it's ready right now.
Creator of it is saying it's not ready for, like.
Well, I think the creator is wrong. I think it's time the creator gets a little more creative.
Well, not another weekend project for you.
I know,
but actually, Max. But tell me a non-sci-fi, an actual real product today that can only be purchased in Bitcoin.
I mean, anything that uses Bitcoin itself. So again, even though we say it's sci-fi, let's take away the domain piece. If you wanted to buy an ordinal, and I know that's great for all the JPEG maxis out there. Okay, well that trading pair is Bitcoin because you're buying a piece of Bitcoin. You're already going to have to receive Bitcoin. Then why would you use anything other than Bitcoin? That's one example. Another example would be, I don't know, like a synthetic financial product, Bitcoin. So let's say you wanted to buy synthetic Apple stock or, you know, a synthetic, I don't know, like long or dollar like Galois has with stable money, that's all Bitcoin native. So it's like, if you're buying this product and the underlying is itself Bitcoin, then you wouldn't want to make the trading pair more complex.
Okay. All right. I mean, sure. But like that has essentially zero volume right now. And the rest of the world's just going to use USDC.
I hear you. But that's why I'm pushing on DK's thing, because, you know, sci-fi or not, this has a very clear, unique value prop to me. It's like a domain you own doesn't exist anywhere else. And so if a domain you own, which any normal developer or agent is like, oh yeah, that's, I get it. That's important. And it's directly on the Bitcoin blockchain, and therefore you need to pay in Bitcoin. That's the kind of thing that I think that can bootstrap.
All right. My concern, I feel like there should be urgency around Bitcoin payment adoption.
I agree.
In this year. And so it's interesting and valuable to talk about future projects that might exist years from now. But like, what are the things people want to buy today in 2026?
I'm saying they don't exist. I'm saying we need to create them.
I think just buying traditional domains is one that exists today and doesn't require any sci-fi future. I think the, you know, having cryptographically anchored unique domains or kind of unique namespace is more in the sci-fi camp. So I would agree that I think it's inevitable in a sense that we need something like this, but I don't think people are clamoring for it today. Whereas I think agents would like to be able to register traditional domains, even with all their censorship problems. I think that's just a use case that exists today. So if we had, if I were to say, hey, like, should we spend our time on the, you know, new domain idea or just wrapping existing domain registration in Bitcoin and getting it out to agents, make it agent accessible, I'd say go for the latter easily. And then we can sort of, you know, let the other one gestate and emerge over time. I don't think there's as much urgency for it.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I'm not disagreeing. I would also say maybe spend the extra hour on CloudCode and do both.
So Vinny says, the value of stablecoins just easy on and off ramps. So I think, one, most people are just accustomed to dollars and not Bitcoin. So they have to be, they have to change their mind. They have to change their mind and behavior to adopt Bitcoin, where adopting dollars is not a change for them. Two, they want the stability. I mean, they're called stable coins for a reason. So most companies, their liabilities are in, at least in the United States, are in dollars. And so they don't want the volatility of Bitcoin relative to the unit of account they use for their businesses. But three, you have very large companies, powerful companies with huge marketing budgets that are going to create awareness around their products. So you've got a seller who's used to accepting dollars, and then they're used to working with big brands and companies. So a big brand, reputable company comes to them saying, we have a dollar solution for you that works with agents and everything. That is comfortable for them. It's normal. And they're unlikely to go investigate and research and discover open source Bitcoin projects, right? So that's why I think it's the obvious answer is that they're going to adopt stablecoins. So we need to figure out how to defeat that, right?
Two things I want to mention. One last thought on this. Another reason I think the DNS on Bitcoin is prime time now and is not that sci-fi. There's a reason it's going to bootstrap compared to other things, which is we know what people like to do online. They like to make money. And so the ability to get in early and domain, like I could see all the crypto people be like, oh, wow, this is like that ENS thing that doesn't actually work, but on Bitcoin, that's going to stick around. Hey, maybe I could 100x here in the way that I used to be able to on crypto and eventually before that on Bitcoin. So another reason I don't think it's that out there is like there, if we know there's one thing that people like to do online, it's they like to get in early and squat. So that has that feature built in. Second thing I would say is I just have to ask, I'm seeing in the chat certain accounts that are just dropping emojis over and over again. Do we have bots with us in the chat today? And if we do, what do you guys think about this? Are you using Bitcoin already? And if not, how the hell did you get in YouTube? I thought they blocked bots. If you choose to answer.
Aikida Clary.
Yeah, that seems.
Aikida Clary. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, Nick, if that's one of your bots or someone else, but anyways, seems like there are some bots, but.
We have maybe a minute or two left. How do you want to wrap it up, DK?
I was going to say, we didn't really touch on the OpenClaw joins OpenAI thing. Have you guys followed that story at all or heard about that happening?
Heard about it happening?
I'm going to, you know, I think like, you know, like a good Bitcoiner will question everything. And so I'm going to float a question that I've heard raised. I'm not endorsing this position, but could the whole OpenClaw hype wave actually been a PSYOP orchestrated by OpenAI? I've heard that proposed a lot.
Go on. I have not heard this.
Meaning to... shift attitudes towards on safety and like making less safe AI normalized
to trash Anthropic and get people off using ClaudeBot.
Maybe some of each of those. Also, I think like to reclaim the mantle of openness, because OpenClaw is genuinely open source and OpenAI is genuinely extremely closed, though it was founded on a idea of being open and good for humanity. So OpenClaw is kind of this fairly neutral looking open source layer that has recently become very popular. And I'm not endorsing the position, by the way, but I've heard it proposed or asked? Is this something that was orchestrated in order to create a perception of more openness that then OpenAI could co-opt and own?
I think we need to ban this Aikida Clary account.
I can't see the chat. What's going on?
Accountability, responsibility, national security, transparency, all separate messages.
Okay, that sounds like a bot.
Well, it said it's Cali native. It's a Cali native bot.
Anyways, whatever. Bots on YouTube, whatever. It's an interesting theory. I wouldn't put it past them. Then it's interesting. I mean, to me, what's interesting is prior to this takeoff with Claude Bot, everyone was using Claude for code. Claude was the dominant thing. You know, they had all of the goodwill from developers. They were the good guys. All of a sudden, these guys come out, use their name. Anthropic threatens them with a lawsuit. Developers hate them because no developer likes watching open source get hit with a lawsuit. And then Sam Altman rides in as the good guy and buys them. And now the open source project is with the closed company. I mean,
And then the I think most of OpenClaws get used in a Claude code environment. So basically, if you have a Claude Code Max subscription, your OpenClaw is churning through tons of tokens. So I think now probably part of this transition to having OpenAI control more of OpenClaw by having hired the guy, I think Anthropic now is nerfing or limiting the ability for OpenClaw to use Claude Code Max subscription.
Why?
Well, because they can just churn through a lot more tokens than a typical human developer can. So,
yeah, but why not just up the cost? Like, why not charge per token after like a certain threshold? Like, why would you nerf?
I mean, I think maybe that will roll out in a week. But as of now, I think they're trying to be kind of batten down the hatches a bit on what's effectively like kind of a free token or a fairly generous token allocation that was designed for humans and not sort of priced for kind of relentless 24/7 bots.
Yeah. Interesting. Can we also just take a moment to just like acknowledge how freaking weird the world is? Like, it's crazy for me. You know, so I've shared with you guys in the past, I'm pretty sure with other people, you know, the Terence McKenna final interview. I think he's one of the greatest philosophers of the last century. But it's weird for me because he was always kind of like a little, let's say he's not mainstream, right? But I've seen to the extent that I've been staying mostly off Twitter, but to the extent I've been on there, he's making the rounds on Reddit, on Twitter, like everyone in his final interview where he talks about how as we move towards what he calls the, basically he calls it a gravity well, which is a point of maximum novelty, in the same way that if you have a well in mathematics or in whatever, you have this like point of gravity, everything sucks down there like a black hole or whatever. And this is his point is as we move closer and closer to whatever this point is, we're just going to see things get weirder and weirder and maximum novelty just come and explode. And it does seem to me that, you know, other people, maybe Ray Kurzweil and others have called this the singularity. Certainly seems to me like we are racing towards whatever that novelty well is. Good, bad, I don't know. But I mean, the world's getting really weird.
Yep.
Including Jason logging.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's our show has reached some kind of milestone to attract such attention or the bar is so low to create noise like this that it has infiltrated us. But
this is an interesting point from both Vinny and Money Devkit. They have, I guess, subsidized Claude subscriptions quite a lot. I'm shocked that of all companies, Anthropic was not ready for machine usage and paying for machines. Like the fact they haven't already shipped that is crazy.
Jason Logging, you're about to get banned if you don't contribute in a significant way to our chat here. Because the problem is it makes it noisy for everyone else.
Yeah, I know.
And then we can't see the high quality comments from our human audience. We accept bot audience too, but it's got to be high quality.
Yeah, we don't discriminate. Yeah, at least if you're a bot, like, say something nice. You know,
burn 100 or 1,000 Bitcoin at least in the generating your comment. Yeah,
if you're a bot, you're going to have to send us some fad zaps.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we could wrap it for the day. Yeah.
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 Good chat, guys.
Good night. Yeah. Good to see y'all.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Have a good one.
Happy Mardi Gras. Bye bye.
Bye bye.